Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit, began working at age 9, lost his dad at 11, quit school at 17, and overcame ADD. In 1976, he started a full-service real estate firm, servicing third parties. In 2004, his wife Susie wrote a book about his infidelity entitled Back from Betrayal, Saving a Marriage, a Family, a Life. His name, Bert Farbman. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Bert Farbman, the founder and chairman of the Farbman Group. Bert, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. I'm pleased to be here.
Can we start by you talking about your parents and your childhood?
Okay. I'm 63 years old, which means I was born in 1943. And my father was a doctor. And my mother was a teacher, and I have two sisters, an older sister and a younger sister. My father grew up, during the Depression, and as a result, worked his way through college and through medical school. And my mother became a teacher when she was 16 years old. When I came into the world in 1943, World War II was still going on, and I think all of the United States was suffering through that war, and I'm sure that our family wasn't much different than that. And what more would you like to know about my family?
Well, your dad died when you were 11. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, my father was... when I was 9 years old, my father got sick, and they had a very difficult time trying to find a diagnosis. And as a result, because he was a doctor and he was friendly with the medical community, they worked very hard in trying to find out what was wrong with him. And so at first, they went to the local hospitals, and they did a lot of research in Detroit, and eventually moved him to New York State, Saranac Lake, New York. They thought that he either had tuberculosis or some form of it, which turned out to be erroneous. That was not what was wrong with him. And he died there 2 years later. So when I was 11 years old, we lived in New York, in Saranac Lake, New York, for a year, and he passed away. And we came home fatherless. And my mother came home without a husband. My mother basically left the home 2 years prior to his passing away so she could take care of him. So we were really brought up by housekeepers and maids and so on until I was about 11 or 12 years old. And when my mother came back to the home after my father had passed away, She went back to school and got her master's degree at Wayne State so that she could make enough money to support us while we were growing up. I had a sister that was 3 years older than me, and I had a sister 3 years younger than me. And she worked very hard to bring us up.
What jobs did you have as a very young child?
I started working when I was 9 years old, and I had a paper route. In fact, I had two paper routes. I delivered the Detroit Times and the Detroit News. And from there, I worked in a supermarket called Big Bear Supermarket. I worked as a soda jerk at a place called Don Drugs. I worked in a hospital as a runner between pathology and surgery. worked in the construction field with a company called Ed Rose and Sons. I worked in a title insurance company called Burton Abstract and Title Company. And then after that, I worked for a company called Advance Mortgage, which I guess was my first big-time job, and worked in Michigan, and then I was shipped to Illinois, to Chicago, and I worked there for a couple of years, then came back to Detroit, and then shortly after that went into the real estate business.
The word on the street is that you quit school at 17.
I quit school at 17, yes.
Why?
Well, it took me a few years to find out why. Actually, I found out when I was 55 years old that I was ADD. Attention deficit disorder. And at the time I was in school, no one knew what that was. And I had a very difficult time concentrating in regard to education. And I had a very hard time trying to figure out how one class or course related to another. And so as a result, it was very difficult for me. Also, it was very difficult to read. And I'm sure those listeners out there, parents and children alike, who either have ADD children or they're ADD themselves, will relate to that. And as a result, when I read, even to this day, I have to read every single word. If I'm reading a novel, I have to read every word in order to understand it. I can't skim, or I wouldn't be able to comprehend any of it. And so it takes a lot of concentration, and I just couldn't figure out school. So finally, around 17 years old, I had been through 3 or 4 high schools, and I just couldn't figure it out. My mother was a teacher, and she didn't have any clue. She just thought I was lazy. And I think I thought the same thing, is that I just couldn't learn. Although everything else I did, in my work, in my sporting activities, every other activity I excelled in, but I just couldn't figure out the school thing. And I finally got so frustrated at 17 years old, I left Detroit, and I moved to California. I got a job there in the title insurance business, and I actually excelled beautifully. And after being there for about a year, I felt like I should go back to school. And I came back to Detroit, and I talked the school into letting me come in and do a high school diploma and a degree at the same time in a college locally in Detroit. And as it turned out, it didn't last. It was about a year, and I tried that a couple of times, and it just didn't. I just couldn't get it. And so I ended up going into the business world, the various jobs that I mentioned a moment ago, which I excelled in, every one of them, and reached a point where I just couldn't figure it out. I just had decided to just end the schooling and go on with my life, and I did. I had a tremendous complex about it, and it was one of those secrets that I had that really came to show me some things later on in life of how dangerous secrets are. But that was my one and major secret in the world, is I didn't want anyone to know that I wasn't able to get through high school and then into college. But I excelled in business. I excelled throughout my real estate career. And then after about 10 years of being with a company and being a minor partner in that company, I opened up my own business called the Farbman Group. It was actually at the time called Farbman Stein. I had a partner by the name of Lee Stein. And we operated that business, and after being in business for about 10 years, my partner passed away, and I changed the name ultimately called the Farbman Group, which today is by far the largest third-party full-service real estate company in Michigan, where we handle every aspect of real estate, from development to construction to brokerage, management, development, pretty much every aspect of real estate, financing, and we excel in all those areas and do a very effective job. And I feel that we have created the bar in Michigan when it comes to this type of real estate. We operate about 20 million square feet in our market, and I would feel that we're well-respected in the Detroit area. We have an excellent relationship with the financial community in Detroit, and we have an excellent relationship with our clients, and our office is constantly looking for new ways to do business. When I was operating the business, I felt that we had to reinvent ourselves every 5 years. And in today's world, we probably have to reinvent ourselves every 3 years, so that you're constantly looking for new ways and new fronts to excel in.
We're talking to Britt Fardman. I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Burt Fardman, the chairman of the Detroit YMCA. Burt, you've been in business for 30 years in this town. Very successful. What's been the key to keeping it so successful?
Well, it's a good question. The Fardman Group was created because I felt that we could do our business better than anybody else. And I brought in highly qualified people that could grow each part of our business individually without competing with the people within the company, so that it opened up the door for the best brokers to come to us, the best managers to come to us, the best construction people to come to us, and so on. And I mentioned a moment ago the idea of reinventing the company every 5 years, so that we were always at a grassroots stage. I don't care how successful we got in any given area, I always felt that you should walk into the front door of that office every day like you're just bought the company, and what and how can you do and change it to make it even better. And we lived with that every day. We encouraged the people within the organization to constantly be looking at new ways and better ways to do what we do every day. We constantly are talking to our clients and building relationships with our tenants so that we can do our job even better. And that never stops. And so as a result, when I ran it for about 25 years, and when the boys came in, David and Andy, they took what we did up to that point and just never missed. They never missed a beat. They never lowered their standards. They raised the standards, and they have continued to grow the business beyond where we were then. And we made each, but the people in the company are what make the difference. So often in small businesses, and I don't know if you'd call our business small, medium, or large, but so often in a privately held company, the one person that runs it feels like they have to do everything. So you're limited to their abilities and their time and their efforts. And what we did is we created several people to grow various aspects of the business, and I allowed them the opportunity to not only have the authority, but to have the responsibility, or the responsibility and the authority to grow those businesses. And we just simply nurtured those skills to make the business better.
It's very hard for a family-owned business to turn the business over to sons or daughters. You've done it very successfully. How?
Well, I like to say that because I have two brilliant young men as my sons, but and they are brilliant, and there's no question that their skill level has complemented each other to grow it, but there's more to it. There really is one major ingredient. When I made the decision to turn the company over to them, I gave them the responsibility and the authority to run the business, and I stepped away. And by me stepping away, it gave my sons the responsibility of truly being partners, not trying to get my reactions to things, but for them to work with each other to allow the business to grow. And they knew they needed each other for the success. And so I think by me stepping away gave them the opportunity to really show who they really are. And as it happens, they're very qualified people, and they've done an incredible job. And I'm not they don't have to compete with me or worry about my successes. They have built their own successes. And today, the Farben Group's success is their success, not my success. I took it to a point. I built the infrastructure of the company, and they have grown it to the success that it is today. And I don't have any problem with that at all. I think it's wonderful that they're doing that.
You love Detroit, and you believe in Detroit. Why?
I have been all over the country, and I have done business all over the country. And I have found that as a individual businessman being around the country, that we have all the ingredients right in Detroit, right in our own backyard, for success. And I'm going to give you a little clue. For the first 10 years of my career, I was a suburban developer. And as a suburban developer, I did what everybody else did. And I could have done it in Troy, Southfield, or further out from there, or I could have gone to the suburbs of Chicago or the suburbs of New York or the suburbs of any major city in the country. And all of us were basically doing the same thing. And one day, I had the opportunity with a team to bid on a job in Detroit. It was the Wayne County building. And after we did that deal, which was singly the most difficult deal I have ever been involved in my life, every problem that could have come up in a deal was in that deal. Financial problems, zoning problems, political problems, financing problems, every single problem you can think of came about in that deal. And when I finished it and I saw the reception that building received and the importance in the community, I realized that what I wanted to do was to take all the skills that I had and the business that I had built up and give back to the community and to know and to create an opportunity to make money in Detroit. Because I also knew that if I were able to make money in Detroit, being a developer and being a manager and being a broker and being in the construction business, that others would follow me in. If I went in and did it gratis and didn't make any money, no one else would have done it, and so there would have been no success. But by having success in Detroit, it gave me the opportunity to lead the business community, the real estate community, back into Detroit. And I feel we did that. From 1984, which was the beginning of our redevelopment of Detroit, we were basically the first ones in. And since we have been in there, many others from Detroit, from the Michigan area, from around the country, have come into the city of Detroit and have found places to be successful financially in the real estate business. So that Detroit, being my home and being a community that I feel has all the ingredients that every other community has, with one exception, they needed everything that everybody else already had. So we had a chance to literally start fresh and to do office buildings and shopping centers and industrial facilities and special projects on various types of buildings. We were able to do all the things in Detroit that people were doing all over the country and have found a success in doing it. And I feel really good about it. When the boys came in, and a good part of their activities, they felt the same way, and they followed me in and have done just great things for the community. And I feel that, as a general rule, we're well-respected in the political community, in the neighborhood in the neighborhoods in Detroit, in the users and business community. We have just done a lot of very exciting things in Detroit. And I think in other parts of the country, you wouldn't have had the opportunity to do as many diverse things as we've done in the city of Detroit.
We're talking to Bert Farben, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Bert Farben. Bert, for many decades, you and Susie have been very involved with so many different community initiatives. Can you talk about some of them?
Sure. For starters, Susie and I have had diverse interests in various aspects of the community. Susie in the arts, I in certain activities such as the YMCA, the various Jewish organizations in the Detroit area, clubs and activities in the community. And so we've been involved as chairman, presidents, and workers in probably next to every charity in the Detroit area. In recent years, the area that is really we've really focused on has been education. And there's a lady by the name of Pam Good that got a hold of me in 2004 and showed me an activity that she was working on, which was to get volunteers to come into the city school system, into the public school system, and work with people one-on-one to help them reach a level where they can go back into the student population and do a good job and be able to excel. And I was so moved by what she was doing. Not only did we sponsor a school from the company, the Farben Group sponsored a school, I also taught in that program for a year. And my rationale for getting into the program was photography, and it gave me the opportunity at the Rogers Academy to go in and teach primarily seniors, but I had a couple of juniors as well in my class. I think there were 20 or 21 kids. And from the photographic rationale, and there were some very talented young people in that program, I was able to really get to know the kids, got them involved in some off-site programs. One I remember actually showing them Detroit through my eyes as opposed to their eyes, because their Detroit and my Detroit are two different cities, as you can imagine. They grew up in a neighborhood where they couldn't even play outside without having very close supervision. And my city of Detroit has all kinds of opportunities, with whether it be clubs or organizations or museums. And I gave them an opportunity to see them, including the zoo, which I've been very active in over the years. And it really gave them a whole new way to see Detroit. And I might tell you that my class, which numbered 20 or 21 children, all but one of the children were going on to college the next year. So it was a very successful program, and a good deal of it is beyond basics that really brought personal activities to the kids, personal experiences to the kids, and gave them some insight of direction and future for them. We also put together an annual book for their class, which had not been done in that school for over 10 years. They didn't even have a picture to show for a lot of their activities. And we put a yearbook together, and the class did it and did a fabulous job. And I'm sure that to this day, they're very proud of it to see a job start and finish. And it gave them the opportunity of a success very young in life.
I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WGAR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Bert Farben. Bert, your wife Susie wrote a book about your infidelity entitled Back from Betrayal, Saving a Marriage, a Family, a Life. Can you talk about that?
Well, I sure can. For starters, when Susie made the decision to write the book, I was very much against it, and I tried to use all of the techniques that I had used subconsciously for the years that we had been married to try to control the process and to stop her from doing it. But she was determined to write the book for her own sanity, and she did it. And when she finished the first draft, which took about a year, she read it to me. And after I heard what she had written, I encouraged her to finish the book. I thought that it was something that would help others. You know, one of the things that many people don't understand is that this book was not a book to get back at me. It was a book to help other people. And it's truly a love story. And if any of your readers have read the book or even if you haven't read the book and you're having problems in your marriage or in a relationship, this book is a true gem because it was really the one book that was written that shows you how you can succeed. And what it was a way to get back to the beginning, how we basically developed the problems that we had, and then how we were able to go back and rebuild a relationship in a positive way. And so that's kind of the book. I mean, I could tell you several parts of it, but that's the book. The book was written by Susie, and the last chapter in the book, Susie wrote, but they were my words, and she interviewed me many times to get the feeling, and she got it. I tell you, when I read it, she captured exactly my feelings, and it's all part of the book.
What are the most important things that each of you learned from this whole experience?
Secrets are very dangerous. Communication and truth is extremely important. Honesty, especially with yourself, is very important. To learn from your mistakes together is important. It builds relationships. It builds the relationship, helps build the relationship. I guess those are some of the important factors.
In your chapter at the end, you talk about the difference between forgiving and forgetting. Can you talk about that?
Uh-huh. I asked Susie, after about 2 or 3 years after this happened, if she forgave me. And she said, yes, I have forgiven you, but I'll never forget. And I said, you're better than I am, because I haven't really forgiven me yet. And I think that what I've learned out of all this, from my point of view, when you asked me that, and I think I just picked up on it again, is that your wife can leave you. Your kids can quit talking to you. Your employees can quit. Your friends can ignore you. And the one person you have left is yourself. And the person that you're hurting the most is yourself. You are the victim in this situation. And so what you have to do is figure out why you would do something to hurt yourself. And once you learn that and can find love for yourself, all of a sudden everything begins to make sense. And you begin to see things through loving eyes because you begin to feel your own love and others do as well. So you open yourself up to their love and to your own love.
Have you forgiven yourself now? And if so, how did you do that?
It took time, and the answer is yes, I have. I have forgiven myself, realizing, and this may sound like a cop-out to some people, but the truth is what I'm about to tell you, is that there is no problem in a relationship that is 100% one person's fault. It's both of your faults. It's how you have developed together. And because of that, you have created problems together, and you have to solve the problems together. And so as we have worked through our problems, I have learned many of the things that I did wrong, and I have learned many of the things that my wife did wrong. And it was subconscious. It wasn't deliberately that she was trying to do something wrong or I was trying to do something wrong. It happened over a period of time. And so I have forgiven myself. About a year after the book came out, shortly after the book came out, Susie had cancer. And I lived through that for a year, every single day, went to every doctor's appointment. I went to every meeting, every treatment. And through that process, I think we both learned what love was all about.
We're talking to Bert Fahrman, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Bert Fahrman. Bert, you've had thousands of men call you, and women, who are either in an affair, trying to get on an affair, had the wife leave, etc. What advice do you give them?
Well, for starters, I try first to have them, as Susie does, to read the book, because the book lays out exactly what went on in our lives, and it was done in a very honest way and a very simple way to read it, to understand it. And then once that happens, then to talk about help. I don't think anybody can do this by themselves. I think they need help, whether it's professional help with a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a marriage counselor, a minister, a rabbi. Someone else has to be there to help them through the process to make sure that they're being honest. And I think that so much goes on in a relationship that is so subconscious you don't even know what's happening. You know, when you first get married, each of you have a different vision, subconscious vision of what marriage is. And as a result, the fighting that usually happens that first 18 months of a relationship, which really begins to set the pattern of what your relationship's all about, is subconscious, so you don't even know it's happening. And each person's trying to bring the other person into their vision, and that's where the fights start. And what happens, you eventually begin to learn, don't go there because it's going to start a fight. And that's really the beginning of a deception in a relationship, is that if you can't go there, then you're not able to talk about honestly what's really going on in your relationship. And so as a result, you have to then work your way back to where it started, which is usually the first day of a marriage, and to be able to rework that relationship. And depending on where you are in the relationship, you've been married for 25 years and you have 3 kids and you have all this history together, it would be a shame to throw it all out. In fact, just as a statistical information, 80% of all marriages that end in divorce because of infidelity, 80% of those marriages wish they had worked it out and didn't get divorced. And so it kind of tells you something. And so you need to get professional help. You need to begin to be honest with each other. I mean, I could tell you 40 different things, but the truth is it isn't gonna penetrate. You need help. Read the book, and then get help. Call us, contact us. In the book, it explains how to contact us, and we'll help you through the process. But the beginning is to read the book and understand the problem exists between the two of you, and it isn't one person's problem. It isn't one person's fault. It's both of you. As soon as you point the finger at a person saying, it's all you, you've lost. And my wife was wise enough not to do that. She wanted to understand the problem, and she wanted to understand why it happened. And then we were able to work our way back through it.
In the last segment, you mentioned that Susie has been diagnosed and treated for cancer for the last couple of years. What has Susie's battle with cancer taught you?
That's a tough one. I mean, the lessons in life, you learn, number one, intellectually, we all know we're not going to live forever. But emotionally, you don't feel it until all of a sudden something happens. And when Susie was diagnosed with cancer, it surprised both of us so much because she was always the one that ate well, exercised properly, did all the right things, and all of a sudden she's got the stage 4 cancer from the uterus. And you're saying, well, how did this happen? And as you go through it, you begin to see what true love really is and how you really feel. And number two, it showed us both that life is precious and don't waste it. Don't waste any time. Just to utilize the time while you're here, as short a time as it is, as fully as you can. And that means enjoy family. We have our grandchildren now. We're spending time with them. And also to help and give back in the community. Both of us have always been believers that we owe something back to our community, owe something back to our state, owe something back to our country, owe something back to others. And we feel strongly that that's our job, and so we do that every day, and we appreciate each other every day, holding hands, taking a walk out in the country. Or we're very blessed people, and we have wonderful things that we're able to enjoy together, and we just try to get pleasure out of every single day.
A couple 30, 35, 40 listening tonight says, we're too busy to give back now, Bert. You know, we're trying to get the almighty dollar. We want that second home. We're raising kids. When we get older, will give back. What do you say to them?
I say that in order to have a full life, part of it is giving back, and it feels so good to be able to do it. I don't care if it's a dollar. I don't care if it's an hour a week or a month. Giving back has a certain feeling, and I know, Jack, you understand it because you do it all the time. And the people that we have found in the community that give back seem to be the happiest people. It's a lot more pleasure to be able to give to someone than to have to take from somebody. And our job in life, my true feeling of our job in life is to give and to get and to teach and to learn. And that's our job, every person's job. And there's always something that you can give to somebody. I don't care who you are and where you come in the world. There is something, a gift that you have that you can give back and get great pleasure from that. It doesn't necessarily cost money. It may cost a little time, but everybody should give back.
Life is a series of chapters. You're retired. What's your newest chapter in your life?
Well, other than giving back, it's the pleasure of being a grandfather and to have the time to be able to take my granddaughter to the zoo or to go out for lunch and not have to worry about watching a clock to have to rush back to the office. It's being able to have lunch with a friend and be able to talk and listen and to hear somebody else and how and what they're doing with their lives. It's the ability to take a trip. It's the ability to be involved. Like recently, I've been involved in the Detroit Zoo for a number of years, and recently the Detroit Zoo has become privatized in regard to the operation of the zoo. And it takes time and effort, and I'm able to give that time to our director, Ron Kagan, and it's a pleasure to be able to do it. In fact, I'm putting on a one-man photographic show for the zoo as a fundraiser on the 11th of October, and it's taken a lot of time to do it. If I had been working, I wouldn't have had the time to be able to sit there and to work on this program and to do something that was had value. The YMCA did something similar to that. Again, it took time to be able to do it. Various organizations to improve myself and to learn and get even greater education in certain areas in my life. All those things enrich my life so that this I have the pleasure and the honor to be able to be retired and to be able to use this time as productively as I possibly can.
We have a minute and a half. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Try to live a full life. You give, you get, you take. You need education. You need skills. You need honesty in regard to relationships. You need every aspect that we talked about over this hour. Every piece of it allows you to be a full person and to get pleasure out of every day of your life.
Bert, I want to thank you for sharing with us your humanness and all that you've done these past 40 years in this community and your love for the community. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you, and it's an honor to be here, and it's an honor to have someone like you do this. And I know this is a public service for the community as well, and I have great respect for you for what you're doing.
Thanks much. Our guest next Sunday will be the president of Michigan Orthopedic Services, Tim Codd. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohane.